Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up this hour, Robert Coles will be joining us. He has had an extraordinary life. His latest book is Handing One Another Along, Literature and Social Reflection on Character, Courage, and Compassion. He taught at Harvard University a course for many years that looked at literature, and it included some people who he thinks say a lot about the human condition and say a lot about those who don't have very much. The book and the course that he taught includes long chapters on James Agee, one of my favorite all-time writers. I love James Agee. Charles Dickens and Dorothy Day, George Orwell, and a number of other authors. He is also a psychiatrist, and you'll know this name because he has written The Moral Intelligence of Children and the Spiritual Life of Children. And what do you know, we have our second Pulitzer Prize winner with us, because he won a Pulitzer Prize as well. So we're going to be with him momentarily. But first things first, I'm Kathleen Dunn. John Munson joining us in our Madison studios today. And this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. You count on WPR's Ideas Network for talk about issues that are important to you, like this hour that's coming up, and we count on you to keep those discussions on the air. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, Kathleen, last hour we had a goal of 50 pledges, and we got 58.
All right. Thank you.
And our reward for doing so well is that we get to raise another 50 pledges.
All right.
That's under the heading of No Good Deed Goes Unpunished. So we need another 50 people to make pledges of support for this great program and the network that it's on. These hourly goals, extremely important to help us stay on track financially. So we want to keep the discussion going on the Ideas Network, and we need your help to do that. Please take a moment right now and give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In just a moment, we will be speaking to Robert Coles. You don't have these kinds of conversations with people like this really anywhere else. His latest book is Handing One Another Along, Literature and Social Reflection. It's about shaping a meaningful and ethical life. And these are important discussions to have here. And, well, they're the kinds of discussions that you want to have throughout your whole life and what you think about every day when you wake up in the morning of how to have a meaningful life and be kind to other human beings. All of these conversations are possible. And let me just say this as well. I can't help myself, but to be able to have conversations with Robert Coles on the radio about life and a meaningful life and being kind to each other and poverty and wealth and what great artists say to us, it's just wonderful to be able to do that for a living and to listen to it. If you want to keep these conversations going, please, 888-202-2552.
Well, the good news is that not only will you get to listen to and have a conversation with the Robert Coles, the author of Handing One Another Along, we have as a premium, as a gift, a thank you gift this hour, a copy of the book, Handing One Another Along, for your pledge of $180. That's just $15 a month. Whatever amount you pledge, the important thing is to make a gift of any amount right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio today is one of the best things that you can do with 3 minutes of your time. And if, as John said, you pledge this hour and can pledge at $180, this book will be with you forever. It's one of those books that will prompt you to have conversations about the meaning of the such lofty stuff, but it's true, and he writes about it beautifully, what it means to be a human being and to be a good human being. So if you can pledge at $180 or gather your money with your friends and you get one book and pass it along, please call. Whether you pledge online or call, we will keep all that information safe.
888-202-2552, WPR.org. Those are the two ways you can make your pledge of support. Remember, to get a copy of the book, you can pledge $180. That's just $15 a month. Or pledge any amount that you can at 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. www.ideasnetwork.org.
Thanks very much, John. Thanks. And we do have a goal of 50 pledges this hour. If you can pledge this hour, I can guarantee you, and pledge at $180. Pull your money if you need to get a copy of this, because there is just so much in it, and it's going to lead you to rereading Charles Dickens or James Agee or Dorothy Day or many others. Robert Coles, our guest this hour, says that if he could have a soundtrack running for you as you read his book, Handing One Another Along, it would be listening to Billie Holiday. In fact, when he taught the Harvard University course upon which the book is based, a course aimed at reflecting on life and moral courage and how we might develop character and moral courage in our own lives, he began each class with one of her songs. We thought we would do the same.
My days have grown so lonely. For you I cry, for you dear only. Why haven't you seen me? I'm all for you, body and soul.
Robert Coles is our guest this hour. He is the author, most recently, of Handing One Another Along, Literature and Social Reflection on Character, Courage, and Compassion. He's an incredibly prolific man, and he has expertise in many areas. He's the author of The Moral Intelligence of Children and The Spiritual Life of Children. I'm sure you're familiar with those books. He also won the Pulitzer Prize for his five-volume work, Children of Crisis. He was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 1998 and the National Humanities Medal in 2001. He is the Emeritus James Agee Professor of Social Ethics at Harvard University, and he is also Emeritus Professor of Psychiatry and Medical Humanities at the Harvard Medical School. He's done a great deal of work, humanitarian work. He believes in service, and he believes that all of us should have some service in our lives. He was at the civil rights demonstrations and witnessed many scenes of racial conflict during his frequent trips to New Orleans, many of those trips related to the desegregation of public schools. He wrote a series of articles, some of you will remember, for the Atlantic Monthly, profiling Ruby Bridges, one of the first black children to desegregate a public elementary school in New Orleans, and therefore a target of daily public protests, intimidation, and even death threats. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Robert Coles. We ask that you speak up. He, I believe, celebrated his 81st birthday yesterday and just needs for us to speak not necessarily more loudly, but clearly. And here's how you reach him for conversation. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Hello, Robert Coles. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, well, thank you for having me with you all.
Was it your birthday yesterday?
Yes. How do you know that?
I read that somewhere. I just was reading about you, and I just said, oh, it's his birthday.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Well, as the comedian Jack Benny used to put it on his radio program, when people ask me my age, I always say 39. I've been saying that for 39 years, but anyway.
Well, may you live 39 more years at least. You start your book with, and I didn't know you were going to start with James Agee, who's always been one of my all-time favorites. I've read him out loud because he speaks so poetically and beautifully about other people's experiences who don't have very much. And,
oh, well, thank you. Go away. Well, I'll be glad to respond to any inquiries you may have or whatever.
Yeah. Tell me about why he was taught in your Harvard class and the meaning that he had for civil rights workers who carried his book and the meaning that he may have for us now.
You mean, well, including Ruby, the story of Ruby Bridges?
Sure, yes. If you want to go that way, that's fine.
Oh, well, I'll tell you how I got to do the teaching. I was actually working in the South. My wife, Jane, and I working with children like Ruby Bridges, who was just mentioned, who led school desegregation in New Orleans a long time ago. I think it was around 1960 when that happened, and that's, we're talking about a half a century ago, when it was a different America, of course. And I was asked to Harvard by Eric H. Erickson, who was teaching at the time and who was a world well-renowned authority on children and had written a book, many books actually, but he a particular book that was a favorite of mine, Childhood and Society, had helped me understand how to work with children. And eventually, he asked me to come up to Harvard and teach in his course, even though by then I was a physician and a psychiatrist and a child psychiatrist. And he said to me, most of the people who teach with me are graduate students, and you're a bit older and have a bit more training. And I remember my wife said to me, tell them that you're just beginning to learn. Mm. And I couldn't have done any of this work, I might add, if it hadn't been for my wife. As he pointed out to me, the child analyst that he was, he said, I think your wife is the key to this, and boy, was he right. Mm. I should tell your listeners that my wife's great-grandparent, this is kind of interesting, was a Union general who led from an old Boston family of obviously white privileged people, and he led the first regiment of African-American troops in the Civil War to fight for the Union. So this is a well-known story. And at Harvard University, they have a whole thing about him and the bridge named after him that opens to the Harvard campus. It's a very interesting story. But the reason I'm telling you this is because if it hadn't been for my wife, I wouldn't have done this work. She was very encouraging. And I stumbled into the work in a way because there used to be a draft for physicians called the doctor's draft. We all had to put in 2 years. And I was in the Air Force stationed in Biloxi, Mississippi, in 1958. And as you can imagine, I hope I don't sound too snobbish about it, there were other assignments I wanted. I wanted to go to Air Force bases out west in California, in England, in France, or wherever. But I ended up in Mississippi, and thank God I did, because it enabled me to learn about part of the country I knew nothing about. And one day I was going to a medical meeting in New Orleans. I was a captain then, and I had my captain's uniform on, and I was going to this meeting, and the traffic was stopped on the old Route 90, I think it was. But anyway, the long and short of it is, they wouldn't let anyone get into the city because there were riots, and the police had blocked off a certain part of the city. And because I was a captain, they were very accommodating, and they told me, we'll let you through, but you're going to be stopped at some point because there were riots in the city. And fortunately, my wife said to me, I think we ought to go and talk, see what's happening with the riots rather than going to the medical meeting. And I said, well, what are we going to see? She said, I don't know. They're talking about children going through mobs, and you're interested in stress in children. And the interesting thing is, my first work that preceded this, which was done in the late 1950s, was called Neuropsychiatric Aspects of Acute Poliomyelitis. That means that I was talking with children who had polio before the SALT vaccine came into effect. And I was talking to them because they were pretty troubled, not only with their bodies, but, of course, psychologically, suddenly to be paralyzed. And I'll never forget, my wife turned to me and she said, Bob, you're interested in stress in children, such as children who have a disease like polio, what about what this child is going to be going through to get through that mob into that school?
Right.
Well, that changed my life.
Oh.
And there was this mob, hundreds of people screaming at this six-year-old girl who had to be escorted into school by federal marshals who, of course, were armed. Then came the question, how was I ever to meet Ruby Bridges? By the way, her last name is a name out of Charles Dickens, because she was a bridge of sorts. And the long and short of it is, I'd be here talking to you for a long time, but the long and short of it is that I learned that as a white person, it was practically illegal for me to go into Ruby's house. At that time, segregation was enforced at almost every level. It certainly was illegal for me, for instance, to take her to an ordinary restaurant to get a milkshake or something, because black people and white people had to be separate in every respect then. The long and short of it is, I did get to meet Ruby, and that had to do with talking with Kenneth Clark, who was a distinguished psychologist, and he said, I think you're going to have to get the okay for this from my friend Thurgood. Well, Thurgood turned out to be Thurgood Marshall.
Thurgood Marshall, oh my gosh.
So my wife and I were escorted to see Thurgood Marshall, and I'll never forget, he turned to me and said, why would you, a young doctor, want to go through something like this? And my wife said, oh, I'm getting the shakes remembering it. She said, because I think he needs to learn some things.
Oh, my. And what, Robert, what were you reading at that time, or what did you read right after that time that helped you make sense of that experience?
Well, let me just tell you how I pressed Ruby about what she felt through when she was going through that mob, what she felt, what crossed her mind in the typical shrink way. This is a stunning moment that I've taught in my Harvard class for years, and it's in that book that was mentioned earlier to your listeners. But I kept prodding her, as psychiatrists do, I hope in a gentle manner, but I was pretty persistent because I wanted to know how she dealt with this kind of horror. And the federal judge, Skelly White, who ordered this, asked me to be in touch with him because he was concerned that he was implementing a Supreme Court decision, but he was worried about what a child like Ruby was going through in order to face mobs just to get into a school building with, of course, the federal military protecting her. Anyway, the long and short of it is I pressed Ruby. I asked her one day, Ruby, as you go through that crowd and they threaten you with, they even threatened her life, as they threaten you, what is it that crosses your mind? The kind of questions shrinks like me ask. I'll never forget, of course, she looked at me and she said, well, I pray for them.
Oh, my.
I looked at her and I said, you pray for them? And there was a silence. And what was crossing my mind is, I regret to say, is that I had to help her to realize how upset and angry and anxious she felt. And here she was telling me she was praying for them, people who told her they wanted to kill her. So she looked at me and she said, well, don't you think they need praying for? At that point, there was silence. And my wife looked at me, and then she looked at Ruby, and she said, Ruby, thank you so much. I think you're helping Dr. Coles understand a lot.
Let's pause for just one moment, and we will return to our conversation. We are really privileged to have as our guest this hour Robert Coles, whose latest book, and he's given us such a body of work over his many years, is Handing One Another Along, Literature and Social Reflection. He is the author of The Moral Intelligence of Children and the Spiritual Life of Children. He won the Pulitzer Prize for his work, Children of Crisis. He has won the Presidential Medal of Freedom Award and the National Humanities Medal in 2001. He is the Emeritus James Agee Professor of Social Ethics at Harvard University and Emeritus Professor of Psychiatry and Medical Humanities at the Harvard Medical School. And he has been front and center in many very important times in American history. I just want to remind you, this is a somewhat unusual interview for us in that he celebrated his 81st birthday and may have a little problem hearing us because he has a few hearing problems, but he obviously is can remember very clearly some remarkably important things that happened to him and happened to this country during his lifetime. So if I can be self-serving, which I will be, I ask that you pledge during this particular hour because I know our audience, Rhonda and Chrissy, and I know who you are, and we have an enormous amount of respect for you, and I know that you will be moved by his book. If you can pledge $180 this hour, it's all of the people, not only his experiences, but all of the people he recommends that we read in order to have a better understanding of how we make sense of the experiences that he just outlined. So that is WPR.org or 888-202-2552. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Southern trees bear strange fruit. Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange from the poplar trees.
Billie Holiday and Strange Fruit, and we weave her into our broadcast because Robert Cole says if you could have a soundtrack running as you read his book, you would be listening to Billie Holiday. And tell me about that before we take a phone call here, Robert Coles. Why Billie Holiday? No, he's not there right now. Okay. Should we take a phone call? Oh, okay. We're going to ask for donations. Why don't we do that, John?
That'd be a good idea since it's our fall pledge drive. seems like the opportune time to do it.
Why not do it?
Just a feeling I have.
Okay. and we do want to let you know, we don't come to you very often, actually, for your help, but we really need your help now. We need to be able to produce these kinds of programs. I'm Kathleen Dunn. John Munson is joining me in our studios in Madison today for the Pledge Drive. More than ever, you rely on Wisconsin Public Radio and the Ideas Network for intelligent discussions, and more than ever, we rely on the money that you give to keep that talk on the air. Your gift today of $60, $120, $180, or any amount will help keep this important forum for discussion on the air in the coming months. Please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we need 50 pledges this hour, which means we need 44 more pledges in about the next half an hour to make our goal. We had a great hour last hour, so let's keep the momentum going. Hey, I just wanted to point out something that happened last hour. We had 22 brand new members to Wisconsin Public Radio.
That's great.
Love to hear that. 3 new members so far this hour. If you haven't ever given before, here's a great opportunity for you to support the programming you love. Thank you so much if you've already given. And if not, help us stay on track by making your contribution right now, WPR.org, or 888-202-2552.
You decide the amount of your pledge. If you can pledge $180 or get together some buddies and pledge $180 or more, we're going to be very happy to send you. And I know you haven't, many of you, read the book yet, but I've read a lot of it. And It's so worthwhile. It's one of those books that you read, and he starts with James Agee, and you go, oh, man, this book is going to be a big book in my life. Handing One Another Along is the name of the book, Literature and Social Reflection. So it's as though you're taking his college course on literature.
Well, you know, on the Ideas Network, you get to hear from and often talk to the person who wrote the bill, who wrote the book, who has unique expertise. We're glad to seek those people out and get them on the show, privileged, in fact. But we need your help to make it possible. Make great radio happen right now with your pledge at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
I know there are many reasons why Wisconsin Public Radio listeners become Wisconsin Public Radio contributors. One of the main reasons is they want to make a difference. Giving to Wisconsin Public Radio is one way to make a difference and to help your local community. Your pledge not only pays for the programs you listen to, it gives other people in your neighborhood the chance to discover WPR. Make that difference and give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You have a lot of expectations of Wisconsin Public Radio these days, and we meet them. We have online streaming, audio archives, downloads, a comprehensive website, HD radio. We're doing it all just for you, but they aren't free, so we need your help. 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
You have a habit of listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Now you may want to start a habit of donating. Pledge your support today and renew that support each year. It's a very good habit. It's a habit you can be proud of. Get it started today with your pledge of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Need 42 more pledges to make our goal this hour of 50 pledges for the Kathleen Dunn program, and you could be next. It's easy to do. Just takes a couple minutes of your time. Please do it now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Consider becoming a sustaining member. This is where you have an automatically renewing monthly contribution from your bank account or credit card. The more sustainers that we have, the more stable we are. And thank you. I love this. We will plant a tree. Talk about an hour that deals with a life of meaning. Planting a tree, one of those big things to do to have a meaningful life. We'll plant that on your behalf. Donate now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And we really do thank you. Robert Coles is our guest this hour. His latest book is Handing One Another Along, Literature and Social Reflection on Character, Courage, and Compassion. And we are welcoming some phone calls, too. Let's take a call from Karen from Rolling Stone, Minnesota. Hi, Karen.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Three of my favorites this morning, you and John Munson and Dr. Coles.
Aww.
Is he available to hear this, or should I ask you to pass this on?
Why don't you, we'll see if he can hear you. Why don't you go ahead and say it, and he'll pick up on what you say.
Okay. I just want to thank Dr. Coles for his willingness to share the wisdom that he has acquired over such an interesting life. A long time ago, I had discovered in a bookstore a book that he wrote about the power of stories, and I got that book. That book started me on the pathway of reading all the rest of his books, and I was fortunate enough one day in a used bookstore to find all five volumes of the books that he wrote about children. Then, about maybe I would say a month or so ago, in my Sunday school class, which includes 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds, we acted out the story of Ruby Bridges.
Oh, my.
Some of the children were the federal marshals.
Oh.
Some of them were the dogs. Some of them were the grown-ups, played the part of the angry people. There were some moms in the class that day. And one little girl who is 5 years old played the part of Ruby Bridges. And we had talked about the fact that Ruby was praying as she walked into the school. It was a very, very powerful experience. The children wanted to play it many more than one time, and we did. And I just am so grateful for all that he has written and for the ideas and the love of children and the interesting takes that he has on important things that have happened. We've already renewed for our pledge for Wisconsin Public Radio, but I can tell you his book will sit on side of my bookshelf along with all the others that I have that he has written, and I'm so grateful to him.
Oh, I'm so grateful you called. You were listening at a perfect time. Thank you so much for your call. Robert, may I ask you, please, about the depth of your life? It is remarkable to me that psychiatry informs your love of literature and understanding of literature and vice versa. You've had really many complete lives in so many different disciplines.
Well, I think the answer to that is I'm a bit of a wanderer.
That's okay.
My father came from Yorkshire in England, and he wandered. He's continued with that word now. He wandered from England to America, and he happened to meet in Boston my mother, who came to Boston from Sioux City, Iowa, not far from your Wisconsin listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And they met that way, and out of that, of course, came their marriage, and then my brother and me. And I should add, my brother, for a long time, was head of the English department at the University of Michigan, not far from, again, where you all are. So you can tell that there's a family tradition of involvement with literature. And to get nearer to your question in a reply, my father, when we were children, used to read to us from novels by Charles Dickens or George Eliot or Trollope. He was a great reader of his, and he loved to read to us children. And it's no accident that my brother, for many years, taught English literature in Michigan, and that I ended up using novels and poems and short stories in my work. Now, I became a physician and a child psychiatrist, but I always felt that that there was a connection between medicine and storytelling, because, of course, doctors ask their patients to tell stories. And very important, when I was an undergraduate, I got to know, through the help of a professor at Harvard College, the American physician and writer William Carlos Williams.
Oh, right.
And that began my life. If that hadn't happened, I know we wouldn't be talking on the phone now.
Mm.
But Perry Miller, who was my teacher, encouraged me. He asked me to write an essay about Dr. Williams, and he encouraged me to send it to him. And at that time, I was very shy, and I said, I can't do that. He said, that must be that you don't think you have the postage. And prodded by that, I got the posters and I sent my essay to Dr. Williams, and he wrote. At that time, Dr. Williams was not popular with the Harvard English department, which was all enraptured with T.S. Eliot and folks like that from Europe and from that world. And here was this sort of ordinary American doc who was writing poems and stories. But the long and short of it is I did get out to see Williams in Rutherford, New Jersey. And that changed my life. He encouraged me to continue to try to be a doctor. And he took me on his house calls with him. What a privilege.
Mm.
And that's how I got interested in literature, in a very concrete way, through the help of an American physician who was himself was a writer and a bit of an outsider. And I think, I guess I've always been a bit of an outsider myself. But I got to know him, and I worked on it, and went back and eventually went to medical school. And then when I was a medical student, I went on rounds with him, and he used to joke with me. He said, you know, when I was younger, we didn't have to take all those damn, pardon the language, those damn pre-med courses, because we just went right from high school to medical school.
Oh, my goodness.
Unless you were born too late. But anyway, the long and short of it is, with his inspiration, I continued my work. And then we had a polio epidemic. that I've already, I think, referred to that
yes.
got me very involved with children going through polio. And then the next thing I knew, I was with my wife in the South because of the military draft. And that's how I met Ruby. But the long and short of it is that when she told me her story, I was listening with Dr. Williams's ears, and with that kind of knowledge that he gave to me about how to understand people and learn from them right in their midst, so mm-hmm. to speak, in her home. And let me tell you another story
okay.
that happened with Ruby, too, because no one sent their kids, no white family sent their kids to that France school in New Orleans. And then one day, a couple of white kids showed up, stunning everyone, breaking the boycott. And, of course, they, too, had to be escorted by federal marshals. But this was a very decisive moment. And their name was Connor, C-O-N-N-O-E-R. But I eventually got to meet the Connor family, and this is another interesting story. I was trying to find out why they would do this, why they would send their children through these terrible mobs in order to get, and,
yes.
why, and as white people, incur the risk of danger to meted out to them by an angry group of people. The long and short of it is, as I prodded Mrs. Connor and those children, I found this out. This is also a chapter in that book that you've so kindly recommended to your readers, handing one another along, because there is a chapter there where I describe what happened. I asked Mrs. Connor how this happened. I was curious to know what her motivations were. And finally, she leveled with me. She said, I must tell you this. She was a little shy about it, maybe even afraid to let me know the truth. But my wife, as I mentioned earlier, a wonderful companion in so many ways, encouraged her. My wife, by the way, was a high school teacher of history and literature, so that's a further answer to your question about my interest in literature. I was married to a woman who loved literature, let alone being the son of parents who did.
Yes.
But the long and short of the Connor story is one day, with my wife's gentle relationship with Mrs. Connor and just saying, explaining to her that her husband was a physician and as a doctor, he wanted to know how children deal with stress. He'd worked with kids who had the stress of polio before the Salk vaccine, and now he was observing what Ruby was going through and a couple of other kids in other parts of the South, and he was interested in how the children manage under those circumstances. Mrs. Connor then told my wife and me this. She said, I'm paraphrasing now, but she said, well, it all happened one morning. I woke up, and the kids, of course, weren't going to school. They were around the house, and suddenly I heard something break, and it was a lamp. The kids had gotten into a fight. They smashed one of the lamps, and she got up, and she turned to the children. She said, I've had enough of this. You're going to school.
Oh.
When I told the federal judge, Skelly White, whom I mentioned earlier, this story, he said, that's the way history is made.
That is the way it is made.
And in a way, you know, the reason I love literature, I love stories, whether it be by Tolstoy or our own American Raymond Carver or Tilly Olson, who grew up in Nebraska or whatever. I think that these stories are stories very much like life's stories. And so she finally sent them off to school. And this changed the history of everything of New Orleans. The mob then retreated. It was the breakup of the white resistance. And now, in a way, her children integrated the school that will be integrated. First alone, now she was with some white children, and that's how that history developed.
Robert, what does it mean to hand one another along?
What was my role in it?
What does that phrase mean to you, handing one another along?
Oh, what it tells me is that we learn from one another and learn through the experiences of others that that are conveyed to us either by them or by the situation that creates those experiences. And in a sense, what it tells me is that we're not only driven by particular stories of our family life, but that we're part of a world, whether it be a school or a working place or a neighborhood, and we hand one another along. We learn from one another. We're part of a community. Even as Americans, we hand one another along in the sense that we belong to a particular nation, and the events that take place in that are also events in our own lives. We read about them, we hear about them, we witness them, whether it be radio, television, the newspapers, whatever. And I think, in a sense, what I've learned from those children and from seeing young people go through what I've seen, whether it be struggling with polio in a hospital ward or a mob on a street of an American city, what I've learned is how the possibilities in children and how those possibilities can change both them and the communities of which they're a part.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately even the nation, because after all, Ruby became, in her own way, a very important American. She was recently at the inauguration of an American president. The reason she was invited to that is because that president knew that she was, she may have been 6 years old in the wars at that time, and she's not a celebrity in the sense that she hasn't done the things that a lot of people do to make them well known, but she, in her own way, made American history and deserved that recognition. And the same thing goes for the white children who braved a similar kind of resistance to stand up for what they believed in. Ultimately, I worked in the Mississippi Summer Project of 1964, so that a project that ultimately ended up making Mississippi a great state with voting rights for everyone and made America different. Some of your listeners may remember Andy Goodman and Schwerner and Cheney.
Yes, of course.
The three young people who were killed in Philadelphia, Mississippi. And I will tell your listeners, I could have been the fourth. I was ready to go with them.
Oh, my.
I was ready to go with them, and a hand on my shoulder said to me from one of the organizers, I think you should stay here because a lot of the parents of these young American students from all these wonderful colleges across the country and different backgrounds of race and creed and religion, the parents, we think, will listen to you because you're a doctor who teaches at Harvard. I was a little embarrassed by that, but the long and short of it is, obviously, I didn't go to Philadelphia, Mississippi. I got out of the car where I was ready to go, and I still remember that moment with a shudder.
Oh, Robert, what a story. Thank you so much for being with us and for all that you've done and for this book, which I know will stay with me for a long time as well. And happy birthday. Thank you. I do want to remind you as well that Robert Coles has, let me just get to that part of the book. I love these kinds of lists, and I know that you do as well. Part of his book, The End, has a whole reading list for life. It's a syllabus. How many people put this together? I just love this. It's such a wonderful public radio thing to do. The syllabus from a literature of social reflection. All these 5 pages of recommended reading, including Raymond Carver and James Agee and Walker Evans, several books by Robert Cole, who has produced such a body of literature. George Orwell, Walker Percy, The Moviegoer, Leo Tolstoy, Dorothy Day, Ralph Ellison, Walker Evans, and the list goes on. It's a wonderful list, and it's just an extraordinary book as well. It's what a good life is all about, and who he reads, who he believes really get to the essence of moral courage in our own lives, how we develop character, and a reflection on life and moral courage. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kathleen Dunn. John Munson joining me in our Madison studios. This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Our goal to keep bringing you discussions with people such as our guest, Robert Coles. And we do that in large part with listener contributions. Your gift of any amount right now makes a big difference as we raise the money that we need to make these discussions possible. Please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, our pace a little bit slower than it was the first hour, Kathleen. We need 35 more pledges in about the next 10 minutes or so in order to make this hourly goal of 50 pledges and 100 pledges for the 2 hours. You can be next. Pledges like yours keep us on track to support the programs you count on. Thank you so much to all the people who've already given. And if you're not in that group, well, you can change that at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You decide the amount of your pledge and ask for the book, Handing One Another Along, which I guarantee you will find to be extremely meaningful. That's for a pledge of $180. Pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, what an enjoyable conversation with Robert Coles about shaping a meaningful and ethical life. You know, that's one of the things that's sort of at the core of what the Ideas Network is all about. Well, take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours to come possible. Put a value on the programs you enjoy every day and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Giving could not be simpler either at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. All we need is your name, your contact information, the amount of your pledge, and how you would like to pay.
Hey, use a credit card if you can, because that saves you and WPR some time. More importantly, the price of a stamp and some paperwork. Or better yet, sign up for automatic sustaining donations from your bank account. And don't worry, we will not share your personal information with any other organizations. Please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we are here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support, a big part of why this program is available to you right now. Amy from Wisconsin Rapids writes in, John, I value what WPR stands for and the service that it provides the community. And we're proud of what it stands for. Please make your donation in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and help pay for these programs that you would look forward to every day. You get up and say, oh, I wonder what's going to be on Kathleen Dunn today. We need 35 more of you to make pledges before the top of the hour here, just a few minutes away, to help keep this programming coming. Make your contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You decide the amount of your pledge. We purposely booked Robert Coles because I knew many of you would be familiar with who he is and what his body of work. And if you ask for Handing One Another Along when you give $180 or more, we will be very happy to send it to you. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, Kathleen, one of the great things about Wisconsin Public Radio listening is that it's like a tuition-free lifelong education, and no quizzes, no research papers to do. You don't get graded on attendance.
That's true.
This is perfect.
I like that analogy.
All you
yeah.
need is a radio or a computer to listen in. But we need your support in order to keep this stuff coming. Contribute now at WPR.org or 888 202 2552.
If you can, consider a $1,000 contribution. That has happened before, and it will help to cover the costs that make fulfilling our mission to bring valuable programs to Wisconsin possible. Please make your pledge now. We're coming up toward the end of the hour, and you can make a pledge for any amount at WPR.org or 202-2552.
888-202-2552, WPR.org. Still need 35 pledges to make this hour's goal here at the on the Kathleen Dunn program. Thank you so much to Kenneth from Mount Horeb and all the other great people who've made pledges this hour. You can be next at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Think about how often you tune in to Wisconsin Public Radio. It might be every day or your way to and from work or over the lunch hour, and then it's some more on weekends. It's an important part of your life. Please pledge, because we know how important it is to your life. 888-202-2552.
Well, maybe you donated a while ago. And
could
then
be.
You haven't donated for a while. You thought, well, I did my part. But you enjoy listening to WPR year after year. We need your continued support to keep this organization strong. Has it been a while since you donated? Well, rejoin now. We'll welcome you back at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you, John. Thanks so much, John Munson. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for doing production of this program as we broadcast from Madison today. And thanks to Chrissy Pease for on-air production. A reminder that we'll be with you again tomorrow. We're going to do that Sean Wilentz book on Bob Dylan tomorrow and listen to some Dylan tunes. So that will be during this hour. Thanks for all of your pledges. Thank you for listening. This is the... And pledge, please, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. 552.